This is fun! The FU Network!
I'm Stephen Kersner. This is an FU Politics News special. We're going to be talking about parliamentary privilege. Canadians have been hearing about parliamentary privilege, who can and can't waive it, for several months now. And many people have been expressing an opinion about parliamentary privilege and why it should or shouldn't be waived. The problem is that because most of us, and let's be honest, slept through high school civics class, we don't really know what we're talking about when we talk about parliamentary privilege. So I want to talk to somebody who was in Parliament. We're going to be talking to the Honorable Marlene Jennings. She's the former Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister for International Cooperation and the former Parliamentary Secretary to the Solicitor General of Canada and former Parliamentary Secretary to the Prime Minister with special emphasis on Canada-US relations. Thanks for joining us, Ms. Jennings.
My pleasure, and please call me Marlene.
Okay, very good. So, you were in Parliament. Do you understand what parliamentary privilege is and why it exists?
I do, and let me just start off with, don't be surprised that the overwhelming majority of Canadians have no clue as to what parliamentary privilege is. And I can tell you that the overwhelming majority of members of Parliament and senators also do not know or understand. It has to do with the fact that under our system of government, cabinet and anyone who's a member of cabinet has what's called collective responsibility, which means that when you are a member of cabinet or you sit in and have the privilege of sitting in cabinet or in cabinet committees to discuss issues that are important to Canadians, possible policies that you want to bring into law, or policies that are already in law but you want to make a significant change to. Everybody has to be able to express themselves fully, and they have to be able to do so knowing that what they say remains privileged or secret and confidential.
I think people just wonder, what are you talking about? And you were a parliamentarian, so you know, what are you talking about behind closed doors that the people of Canada shouldn't be exposed to or shouldn't have revealed?
Let me give you an example. I had the privilege of sitting in a meeting, an official state meeting with President George W. Bush. Condoleezza Rice was there. Colin Powell was there. There were a couple of other senior heads of different, you know, Homeland Security, whatever, of United States. On the Canadian side, there was Prime Minister Paul Martin, me as his parliamentary secretary. There was Pierre Pettigrew. There was Ralph Goodale.
So some very people with some high pedigree.
Yes. The counterparts of the Americans for Homeland Security, for foreign affairs, etc.
Okay.
And we discussed some very current files, issues at that time that were of supreme importance to Canada and United States, but also some questions that went beyond our borders, so international. And those are the kind of things that you do not want the minutes of the meeting made public. So usually at the end of those kind of meetings, they have their assistants sit down and actually write a joint press release in which the wording, the scope, and what they actually divulge has been agreed upon on both parties. And then both heads of state and anyone else who was in the meeting who gets asked by an individual, a member of the public, or by a member of the media, stick to those lines. Because we know that by doing that, we're not divulging anything that's supposed to be kept confidential.
So what you're saying in this case, and we're not relating this specifically to SNC-Lavalin, we're just talking about the notion of parliamentary privilege. What you're saying is what we have to be protected from, the information that shouldn't be released, is in the best interests of Canadians not to have it released because it could contain conversations and plans that are in action that would tip off bad actors. So there are good reasons for parliamentary privilege. The people out there have a reason to wonder when a government says, yes, I'm going to let these people talk, I'm not going to let these other people talk. Yes, I'm going to release these files, no, I'm not going to release those other files. It's human nature to assume that the people you're not let talking and the files you're not releasing, you're doing so because you're trying to protect yourself legally, because we have a very, very jaundiced view of not just human nature, but a terribly jaundiced view of politicians, in that there's this general perception that politicians are just dishonest at their base. And so when a prime minister says, I can't waive parliamentary privilege. I've waived as much parliamentary privilege as I can. I can't waive parliamentary privilege on these other things. We don't know in this case what the reason for not lifting parliamentary privilege is for those who, you know, Dion said that there were people that he was prevented from hearing testimony from. And that could be because, from what I'm understanding, their testimony may unintentionally touch upon cases that are going before the courts or may go before the courts or policies that are being enacted, which will then have bad collateral damage on other matters that have nothing to do with what's being investigated. And the risk of that, the risk of the collateral damage, the risk of information getting out that will hurt the actions of the government of Canada, not the Liberal Party, but the government of Canada, the risks of that are so strong that it's best to just say, let people say nothing. Because we all know some people who are not professional speakers. And once you get them talking, you can't get them to stop.
True.
What would be a reason that the Privy Council, which is under the control of the Prime Minister. Prime Minister can waive that privilege at any time. What would be some reasons to deny the RCMP interviews or files under parliamentary privilege that have nothing to do with criminal intent?
It has to do with the actual Canada Evidence Act. And the Privacy Act make it very, very clear what is subject to waivers of cabinet privilege and what is not. And the clerk of the Privy Council has a legal obligation and responsibility to actually implement the specific sections of the Canada Evidence Act and the Privacy Act. And those acts are very clear as to what can be released and what may not be released.
Okay. What might be the kinds of discussions or files or information that a person or a file would hold that would have the Privy Council say, no, this should not be something that we waive privilege on? What kind of issue, what kind of discussion? Help us understand what's going on there in secret that has nothing to do with covering up villainy, but may in fact cause harm otherwise. What other harm could be caused?
Sometimes it's because you could be having a serious and ongoing discussion and debate on a specific policy issue, but it also would have an impact on some other policy or legislation, and that could put in jeopardy something else. Let me give you an example. On the remediation agreements, commonly referred to as the deferred prosecution agreement, and that was the big thing the big discussion, the big fight. It's very possible that during those discussions, other companies' names came up, intertwined, and it's virtually impossible to delete those sections. It could cause collateral damage on other individuals or legal entities like companies that have nothing to do with the issue at hand. Then you're in a position, well, we don't want to cause that collateral damage. We don't want to take that chance, in which case we're simply, and under the Evidence Act, they don't have to release.
Now, in the States, we see records being released redacted with black markers through them. Could, in Canada, files be released with the same black marker through those names that we don't want coming to, you know, public interest?
I believe that it is possible and it does happen. The problem is that sometimes by redacting super sensitive information, it makes nonsense of what's actually made public, in which case you might as well not make it public.
But in which case the argument could be made, if they were to redact and release documents which, with the redactions, make the documents of very little value because of the redactions, what's the harm in releasing those and saying, here, you wanted them, here they are, we're protecting certain people's interests, here, you wanted to read this, here it is. It's like a Mad Libs, but you know, it's not going to provide much information to you, but as long as everybody is redacted and covered and protected, why not just say, the hell with it, here are the documents, take a look, see if you can find anything in that word salad.
That's a possibility. That's a possibility.
Is it possible that when you release documents that are full of redactions, you then get questions from the press and the other parties as to what has been redacted and what is it covering? Is it covering something criminal? Is it being used to cover bad acts? And then it makes the government look even worse. And the journalists start looking for what was redacted, because that's their job, to find the truth. And so if they manage to, they may uncover some of the redacted information because it has been delivered to them, and we then have collateral damage. Is that possible?
That is very possible. And let's face it, one of the things that make us the most curious is when we're given a piece of information and we know it's only a piece, then we're wondering, well, why wasn't I given the other information? What is that other information? And then we put our efforts there.
Whereas what are you hiding? That kind of thing.
Exactly. So sometimes it's better just to say, no, you're not getting anything, and, you know, take the flack. Oh, they're hiding something. Yeah, but you don't know.
So in either case, in either of these two scenarios, the opposition parties and the press will say something is being hidden. If you don't release them because of parliamentary privilege, they say, what are you hiding? If you've got nothing to hide, why aren't you releasing it? If you do release it and there's things redacted because it may affect individuals or companies, or legal cases or policies that are being discussed and are not germane to this particular case, they're redacted, then people say, well, what are you hiding in the redactions? And nobody will ever be satisfied. No matter which way you go, somebody on the other side is going to say, you're hiding something.
The clerk of the Privy Council makes a ruling saying that this document or these discussions that took place in cabinet or in cabinet committee under the Canada Evidence Act and under the Privacy of Canada Act are deemed to be confidential and not to be made public. The clerk of the Privy Council makes that determination. So then we turn around and we say to the Prime Minister, well, you have the power to overturn that. Yes, he does. However, for him to overturn a decision of the clerk of the Privy Council, he better have some damn good reason.
For a prime minister to just waive parliamentary privilege to make a political scandal go away would be not a responsible use of the powers of the prime minister.
In my view, it would definitely not be the responsible use of his authority and powers as prime minister. You do not make those kind of decisions based on your political interests. You have to make them based on the interests of government, the interests of our country, and our system of law. And even if it means you're going to be taking a lot of heat in the public, oh, what are you hiding? Oh, you must have done something wrong. You must have said something wrong. You take the heat.
So it's entirely possible that Justin Trudeau is currently being criticized for not allowing certain people to testify because he's upholding the tenets of the office of the prime minister. And in reward for taking his job seriously, he's being hit with slings and arrows as somebody who's trying to hide something, even though he allowed Jody Wilson-Raybould to speak in open camera for 4.5 hours.
Yes.
The people out there have a reason to wonder when a government says, yes, I'm going to let these people talk, I'm not going to let these other people talk. Yes, I'm going to release these files. No, I'm not going to release those other files. It's human nature to assume that the people you're not let talking and the files you're not releasing, you're doing so because you're trying to protect yourself legally. Because we have a very, very jaundiced view of not just human nature, but a terribly jaundiced view of politicians, in that there's this general perception that politicians are just dishonest at their base. And so when a prime minister says, I can't waive parliamentary privilege, I've waived as much parliamentary privilege as I can, I can't waive parliamentary privilege on these other things, the narrative would then be, well, the things that are being hidden in that are being hidden to protect criminal acts, to protect the prime minister, as opposed to other benign or virtuous reasons. So there's no winning. You don't waive cabinet privilege or parliamentary privilege, you get pilloried for it. You do, and you have any redactions, which you're going to have to because that's the reason for holding these files back, you're going to get pilloried for it. So there was really no way for Prime Minister Trudeau to walk away from this thing unscathed. No matter which way you turn, somebody's going to be accusing him of trying to hide something. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. Is that not true?
It's very true.
That's not the narrative that's out there now, because some people think the prime minister has nothing to do but sit there all day and look at this one file. At the time that this was going on, it was also negotiating a free trade agreement with our major trading partner, run by somebody who is irrational, and bullying. There was and other trade things. And the prime minister has a million moving parts going on at all times. So that's why they'd say, here, Privy Council, you look into this, because I haven't got the time to look into every single thing. And when they come back with recommendations, to just say, all right, well, the hell with you. I'm going to overrule you to try to save my ass. And in the process, other people may get burned. That's not the mark of a good prime minister, is it?
No, it's not. I actually think that, you know, Justin Trudeau has to date actually ruled in a manner that's for good government, for good security, and has been prepared to take the personal hits for his decision.
That's what may very well be going on and may very well trip him up in the upcoming election.
It may very well, but you know what, Stephen? That for someone who goes into politics, not for their personal interests, but because they actually want to help move the needle in a positive way for more Canadians on a variety of different issues, then you are prepared to take the hit sometimes. If it means that medium, long term, things are going to move forward or things that are important.
Wow. I mean, okay, let's be honest. You were a former liberal cabinet member.
Member of parliament.
I have tried to separate truth from fiction on SNC-Lavalin so many times that people have determined that I'm in the tank for Trudeau. Like that I'm his tidy bowl man. If you remember those old commercials, he'd lift the top of the toilet tank and there's some mariner in a boat. They think that's me because I'm trying to separate the factual from the not factual, because I think that the Prime Minister's office, based on the report of the Ethics Commissioner, there are problems there that should have been focused on. There was communication problems. There were people, members of the PMO, running around like the Three Stooges. There was a lack of control, of discipline, and of communication in the Prime Minister's office during that time. That concerns me, but that's not what people are focusing on, because even though that is factual, they're instead focusing on innuendo, rumor, suspicion, and personal political gain.
I agree. And I as well, you know, when I read the Ethics Commissioner report, my goodness, what is it with some of these people, being in the Prime Minister's office, and in some cases in the Privy Council? Do they not understand the basic tenets, laws, rules and regulations regarding what you can do, what you can't do, the actual processes? And it seems like they all need a course in one, cabinet confidentiality, two, parliamentary privilege, three, the ministers, anyone who gets appointed to cabinet needs to really understand the ethics, the rules of ethics. There need to be courses on that, I think. And they need to have possibly experts embedded in the Prime Minister's office so that anybody working there can actually say, look, I want to say this, or I want to do this, I want to contact this person. Is it okay? Or should I not be doing it at all? Or yes, I can do it, but only in this way. None of that seems to exist. And I think they need to put something like that into place. I really do.
Now, in fairness, the Ethics Act, there are a number of portions of it which are very subjective. They rely upon an individual's personal feelings or personal suspicions. And it's very difficult to know what's in somebody else's head. Ms. Wilson-Raybould, when it started to get to the point that she wanted to record the clerk of the Privy Council, didn't instead go directly to the Prime Minister, who didn't actually know all this was going on because he had a shitload of other things to do, excuse my French. So it's, to be fair to the people in the Prime Minister's office, not knowing about what the Ethics Act contained, there's a lot of vague in there. And a lot of things based on somebody's emotions and feelings and perceptions. I've likened it on Twitter to breaking the law when I speed. And people say that, wait a second, speeding is not like what Prime Minister Trudeau has been found of in breach of. And I say, no, you're right. It's worse, because when I'm speeding, there are signs clearly placed what the speed limit is. I choose to exceed the speed limit, even though I understand what the speed limit is. I am choosing to ignore the bylaw in that particular area, and by the way, endangering people, which I apologize for. That's speeding is exceptionally clear cut, whereas things like the ethics rules, there is no big sign that tells you the speed limit. There is no stop sign that just suddenly appears. There's a lot of things that It really depends on your point of view, as Obi-Wan Kenobi once said. Thank you for taking the time for talking to us about parliamentary privilege, why the Prime Minister may not be waiving it, why his choice not to waive it in certain cases is actually him doing his job as opposed to him protecting his ass. These are things that have not come out in the press, and I think people need to consider when they're considering their voting. So thank you very much for that and for all the other information that you gave us. This was certainly a fruitful conversation. And so I want to thank you, the Honorable Marlene Jennings, former Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister for International Cooperation, former Parliamentary Secretary to the Solicitor General of Canada, and the Parliamentary Secretary to the Prime Minister with special emphasis on Canada-US relations. Also, congratulations, the first Black woman from Quebec to be elected to Parliament. Thank you for joining us and giving us of your time. And we appreciate it and hope to talk to you again in the future.
Stephen, it was a true pleasure to be part of your podcast. And I'd like to do it with you again.
When I need to understand something about government, I'll come to you, somebody who was in government. Does that sound
okay.
fair?
Okay.
All right. That's a deal. And I want to thank you for listening. And if you've enjoyed this podcast and you think you got something from it, listen to the other podcasts on FU Politics and please consider supporting us so that we can keep doing this. Patreon.com/FU Network TV is where you can get a subscription for $1 or higher and help support what we do month to month. Or PayPal is FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. I know lots of people are asking you for money. Consider whether this is worth it or you want to go spend the same money on an overpriced coffee. I'm Stephen Kersner. This has been an FU Politics News special. Thank you for listening.
This is fun! The FU Network.